Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Welcome to the Metron Live podcast, coming to you live from beautiful, historic Midtown Atlanta on a foggy Sunday morning. Metron people, would you please welcome the podcast people? Glad that you are here. Those of you that listen to the podcast, wherever you are in the universe, thank you so much for your feedback and your comments. They really mean a lot, and they are very encouraging. This month, we're talking about specifically about love and fear, and the title is The Liberated Heart, Freeing Yourself from the Past and Breaking the Addiction to Fear. The scripture that I want to base this on is 1 John chapter 4, verse 18. King James says, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. I want to show it to you in the Jonathan Mitchell New Testament, which is admittedly wordy, but I love his exploration of language. He says, fear does not, or the scripture says through his interpretation, fear does not exist within the love, but rather perfect love or mature love or love having reached its goal repeatedly or habitually or progressively throws the fear outside, because the fear constantly has and holds a pruning, a curtailment, a checking, a restraint, a lopping off, thus a correction. But the one habitually fearing or dreading has not been perfected within the love, has not been brought to the destined goal of maturity or in union with love. Now, it's interesting that John has this paradigm, because so much of traditional Christianity is really based on fear. It's fear motivated. Roe was raised in the Roman Catholic Church. Eddie and I were raised in Pentecostal church. I guarantee you, we probably had this. If you were raised in a Baptist church or whatever, you probably had your own fair share of fear. With us, it was going to the altar and repenting and getting saved over and over again. I don't know, the Methodists, y'all didn't seem to be that fearful. Methodists seemed to be a little more relaxed. But I know all my Catholics know where the fear is. Especially if you went to Catholic school, those nuns made sure you were fear adjacent. But the revelation that John has is, well, no, fear, if you really understand the revelation of love, you're not afraid of punishment. You're not afraid of torment. I don't know if you've watched this. It's kind of like America's Got Talent. It's this show. It premiered after the Super Bowl last week. And it's James Corden's on. It's an international talent show. Very, very interesting, because it's acts from all over the world. And this one woman who's Italian, she's a nun, she was on this week and she was singing Gaga's Baby, I Was Born This Way. She changed some of the lyrics, I Was Born to Pray. But it was really cool, because she had some backup dancers behind her that were definitely not nuns. She had a habit on and was, you know, singing, but the girls behind her were more nuns of the Madonna school of thought. Anyway, one of the judges, she was having to speak through an interpreter. One of the judges said, I liked your act, but I'm afraid that because of some of the dancers behind you, you might go to hell. And she said, oh, no, no, everyone is going to paradise. Everyone will be saved in God's paradise. I was like, vote for her, yes. I like the nun who sings Lady Gaga, because she gets it. There is no fear in love. Perfect love casts out fear. And if you go back, there's a guy, I've never met him, I'm friends with him on Facebook, his name's Jacob Wright, and he writes some brilliant stuff about biblical interpretation, and he's a young guy, he's in a rock band, but he's really some of the smartest stuff I've ever read, and he was writing this week about how the early church fathers pretty much all believed in ultimate reconciliation. Even if they believed that hell was literal, they still believed it was temporal. The idea of eternal endless torture is a relatively new idea. When I say new, it's two or three centuries old. The original church fathers did not believe that. And was it Anne Lamott says, we pretty much know that we've created God in our own image when we hate God. Our God hates all the same people we hate. Which, by the way, let me just say this. This probably is not, I'm sure, is not applicable to any of you. It may be applicable to people that are listening. I don't get in the political fray. I try to stay above it. Let me just say, if you're going to post things, whether you're on the right or on the left, to prove a point, please be careful how you use your biblical, how you connect the dots biblically. And as I've seen a lot of people connect Donald Trump to Nehemiah this week about building a wall. I'm like, that's not exactly the same, huh? That's just, if you want to support the wall, that's, but that, what Nehemiah was doing was a complete, Nehemiah didn't have a Statue of Liberty up there that says, give me your tired. And like, that was a different, Mexico as a nation has not declared war on us. So that Nehemiah, just make your point without dragging the Bible into it, on the right or left. And also know when something's Photoshopped. There were some people that were posting things. I'm like, how do you not realize this isn't real? You know, people post things that I'm like, don't you have any discernment at all? I mean, if you're going to make a political point, don't make yourself look like an idiot. Well, it's all a picture of it. Do you not know? Do you not have a computer? You can make a picture. You can create any reality that you want. Just because you see somebody in a picture, I saw a picture of them coming out of a nightclub. They might not have ever met. It's two different images that are put in the same shot. If you don't have, you know, spiritual insight, at least be tech savvy to know that. But I'm saying all that to say the revelation of love brings the absence of fear. And I'm not just talking about divine love. You can't live in a relationship where you're constantly afraid that you're going to be left or abandoned. You can't love somebody because you're afraid you're going to be alone. That's not the way love works. You can't say, I'm in love with somebody because I'm afraid if I don't have you, I won't have anybody else. That's not love. That's codependence. And, you know, I've said this to nearly every single or divorced person I've ever counseled with. It's better to want something you don't have than have something you don't want. And there are worse things than loneliness. Being with the wrong person is much worse. And don't assume that every single person is lonely. It's that, you know, what they want out of life may not be what you want out of life. And back when I used to do a lot of counseling in a day, I can't tell you how many times I would have a married couple, and I'd have a single person or a divorced person or a widowed person come in, and they'd say, Bishop, if I just had somebody, I just had somebody to hold me at night, everything would be okay. And the very next person, the next counseling appointment would be a married couple and say, if he just wasn't here, I'd be okay. If he'd just die, I'd be fine. I'm like, wow, you should meet my 2 o'clock appointment, because y'all are in really different realities. Don't assume anything about anybody. You'll be so much happier. Don't assume somebody else's definition of happiness is your definition of happiness. Don't assume what? Oh yeah, I've had some. Back in the day when you'd have back to back appointments all day long, it's interesting. You'd hear just the spectrum of things. Like I have, I'm not making light of this because I'm sure it was real to this person. This was years ago. Anybody here would know. But I was counseling with somebody who had like extreme sexual issues, and it was one of those appointments where you're like, "Wow, I thought I'd heard it all, but you're telling me some stuff I didn't even know anybody was even into that. I never even heard anybody talk. Like, wow, 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 wow." And then that afternoon, you'll have somebody come in and say, I need to tell you what I did. I'm like, what? I had chocolate cake the other night, and I sat there, and I ate like half the cake, and I feel so guilty. And I'm like, and? You know, I want to go, was the cake on somebody? Like, was the cake with somebody else's? Why? Like, I'm like, and I didn't want to make light because I thought, well, to them, this is really bad. But I'm like, you're fine. You should have met my 10 o'clock. Eat a cake. God bless you. Vaya con Dios. But, you know, you try to meet everybody where they are. See, I'm being funny. Somebody write this down. I could hone this into an act. I also want to show this to you out of the Passion Translation, 1 John 4:18. It says, love never brings fear, for fear is always related to punishment, but love's perfection drives the fear of punishment far from our hearts. Whoever walks constantly afraid of punishment has not reached love's perfection. I posted a quote last night from my meditation by this Sean Stevenson, and his take on it, he says, I love everybody because I have found that if I dislike anybody, it's something like, if I dislike a person, then they control my emotions, they control my thoughts, whatever. And I've kind of said that in so many words, but I thought that's so true. If you're holding a grudge against somebody or you've got unresolved issues and you don't let it go and you keep talking about it, you're only hurting yourself. That person has moved on. We went to a place Friday night where I saw somebody who was a part of my life I never thought I'd see again. And I had in my mind, boy, if I ever see this person again, I got some things I'm going to say. And I looked at this person sitting by himself eating, and I thought, I don't even want to say anything to him. I'm not even mad. I'm just like, I thought I would want to confront him, and I don't even, I mean, if I saw him, I would speak, but it's like, it's just not in me. I was so surprised. I thought, wow, I'm really healed. You know, when you can look at somebody and say, hey, you did some things, I did some things, you said some things, I said some things, it was what it was. That's what love does. When you're constantly preoccupied with somebody else's issues, you're fear and ego motivated. Love just says, hey, stuff happened, live and let live. And I don't just mean romantically, I mean church stuff and all kind of stuff. I remember, I've shared this with you before, but I was doing a workshop with Mark Sharona years ago, and he was teaching on fear and forgiveness and letting things go, whatever, and we opened up for questions and answers. And this woman said, I'm standing in faith that I get back with my ex-husband, and I want to know, how long should I do that before I give up? So in the conversation, Mark said, well, how long have you been divorced? She said, well, 30 years. She says, he's remarried and has another family, but I'm standing on the word. And we're both like, please move on. You just wasted 30 years of your life. He went on with his life, and she's standing on the word? Really? I mean, we thought she was joking. We both had to go, oh, okay. Because she was very sincere. I'm like, no. Pretty much after he walked down the aisle with somebody else, that's kind of your cue. Just statute of limitations. But that just shows you, when people are ego-driven, they get bogged down in the wrong energies. Anything that starts backing you in a corner, anything that starts altering your personality, anything that starts making you act like you're not you, you're in the wrong energy. You got to break that. You got to go back to, you know, I meet people that I can tell they're not even mad about a situation. They're carrying somebody else's anger. You're like, wow, this isn't even your issue. Look, you can, I even posted about this week too, you can have compassion for somebody and even empathy for them without just taking on the weight of the world on your shoulders. I mean, you could, like, you just can't, what did I say in the meditation? I said, you can't drown trying to be an anchor for somebody else. And that's just a matter of balance. But when it's somebody else's issue, my favorite lines, I still think there's a hit in here, Jonah. Jonah wrote a song, I think it was on your EP, Save the Drama for Your Mama. Was that the title of it? It's a great song, though, because they say anything that rhymes, the human brain accepts as true. And sometimes you opt into somebody else's drama. You're like, this isn't even about me. This is your unresolved issues that you're projecting onto me. I love you, but I can't be sucked into your weird negative vortex. You know what I mean? Just because you hate marriage, doesn't mean I'm going to hate marriage. Have you ever, like, it's always, you know, I'll say this to straight men, if your wife is good friends with a woman who hates men, watch out, because there's going to be some conversations. She's going to come home and you're going to say, what's wrong? I'm like, nothing. And she's taking on vicariously the issue of that person. That's not their deal. I mean, I used to have it with people would come to the church who had been hurt by other pastors, and I could tell they're deflecting their unresolved issues on me. I mean, I just would have to say to them, I'm not your ex-pastor. I'm not the one who did this thing to you. If you've got an issue with him, you need to go back and resolve this with him. I'm not him. It's just funny what people don't realize the person they're talking to. Like, a few years ago, they did this play of what's that theater that's over there at King Plow Arts? It was a play about a gay couple that one of them becomes a born-again Christian and it affects their relationship. So because of the play, they invited me and this other out pastor to come and do a question and answer thing afterwards. So we're talking, we're sharing both of our, he was Methodist, we're sharing both some similarities in our journey. He's still pastors over here in Decatur. We were talking and somebody from the audience says, I just want to know, why do you clergymen hate gay people so much? And we're like, well, no, we're talking about, like, yeah, but gay people are people too. And like she was going off at us. We're like, no, do you understand why we're here? Like, that's exactly our point. She goes, yeah, but you just have so much hatred. We're like, no, we're the hated. We're not the haters. And I realized, oh, she's not even in the now. She's having an argument with me. She's stuck in 1978 with something that happened with her. Yeah. And that's what, when you have these weird conversations with people that you don't connect on, it's because they're just not on your wavelength. It doesn't mean they're bad people. They're just in another time zone. They're in another, and you just have to have compassion on them. It's like, oh, they're not even living in the now. I'm living in the now, and I'm not even mad at them. It's just, but I can't go back in time with you because I've evolved from there. My meditation yesterday that I posted, when I got yesterday morning, I always turn on the news first, and I'm checking my messages. When I turned on the TV, I automatically thought about what Saturday mornings were like when I was a kid. Oh, Saturday was nirvana. When you're a kid, there's no school, and you just get up and eat cereal in your pajamas and watch cartoons. And back then, cartoons was a big deal. Now you can watch cartoons at any time on any device, but then that was the only time of the week, and there was nobody telling you had to get ready for church or go to school. It was just like the best. And I said, I remember it fondly, but I don't want to go back to that. It's like I love that happened, but that's not who I am now. That wouldn't be that. I don't want that now. And I was talking about the metaphor of the butterfly. I said, you know, once the butterfly gets her wings, she can't go back and play with the caterpillars anymore. I mean, wings change everything, and wings may be your epiphany, your whatever. But there's just certain. It doesn't mean you're better than them. It just means I'm a different. When Paul said, "If any man be in Christ, he's a new creature," I don't think that's a one-time thing. I think the revelation of the Christ constantly changes you again and again and again. And every time you change, you can't go back. I mean, you can't go back and be something you're not anymore. And so anyway, enough about that. Let me get into, I like this Steve Maraboli. He's a good motivational speaker. I like this quote of his. He says, free yourself from the poisonous and laborious burden of holding a grudge. When you hold a grudge, you want someone else's sorrow to reflect your level of hurt, but the two rarely meet. Boy, that is the truth. Let go. Sometimes forgiveness is simply a reflection of loving yourself enough to move on. This is what I just want to say this again and again, and sometimes I have to say it to myself. Forgiving someone does not mean you condone what they did to you. Don't get it twisted. Forgiveness means I can't put any more energy into this. This is something that is probably never going to be resolved. I'm waiting for apologies that are never going to come because this person does not see this thing the way that I see it. Jesus said, no man comes to the Father unless the Father draws him. And there's a certain truth to that. As much as I believe in communication, there's some things you just can't... If somebody doesn't get it, there's not enough words in the world to make them get it. People have to... They have to have their own revelation. And then at some point, maybe they will say, oh, I need to apologize to you for so-and-so. But if you're trying to force it out of someone, if they don't see that they did anything wrong, even if you coerce an apology, it's not going to take the hurt away, and it's not going to change what happened. And I like that he used the word laborious there, because it just becomes I did a teaching years ago that I've had a lot of comment over the years. I said, anybody that you don't forgive, you subliminally carry with you. Like you go to bed with them at night, you wake up with them in the morning, you have breakfast because they're in your thoughts, you're in your words, and every time you invoke their name, it's like in Beetlejuice when you say their name, like the creature appears. And I said, so that we, the imagery, I said, you walk into a restaurant and they say, party of how many? Party of 103, please. Because that's all the people that you're dragging with you, this entourage of the unforgiven. And, at a certain point when you just got too many grudges, too many slights, too many offenses, you have to start thinking, maybe I'm the common denominator in all this, I remember, I don't know why I'm referring to all these ex-counseling appointments, but I remember counseling with a guy one time, smart guy, sharp guy, articulate guy, had something like 13 jobs in 1 year. And I said, well, what happens? He said, well, every time I go into a job, they hire me, and then everybody turns against me, and they start talking against me and making up. I said, that happens every job you have? And he said, yeah, it's happened over and over again. I said, don't you see what's the one thing that's constant through all of those things? That's why when I had the church, people would say, we've been in 17 churches. I wouldn't even learn their names. I think, well, it's just a matter of time until I tick you off, and I'm going to be number 18, and you're going to be somewhere else talking about me to some other pastor. So nice knowing you, but there's a revolving door. Because if you've had that, I can understand too. It's like when, look, I've been married 3 times. After you get to like 5, 6, 7, 8, once you're like Elizabeth Taylor status, don't you think about it. I think, what do some of these people think when they're number 9 getting married? Really? You think, bless her heart, there was a reel that people put, of things that Elizabeth Taylor said. I think she was married 9 times in her life. And on every one, she'd be in a wedding dress, and she'd say, and I just know this time it's for real and forever. And you would see her through every decade saying that. Anyway, at a certain point, if the same thing keeps happening in your life, you have to say, I think I'm making this happen. It's so empowering when you realize you're making this happen. I told you this, but the night with our thing we had in Unicoi, we were at the beach house on that Friday night, and Ken and I went over. The guys had already built the fire, and it was beautiful, and it was cozy, and I was trying to make sure you all knew how to get up there. So I had my music playing, and I was trying to take a video. I was showing the lake, and I was scrolling down to the fireplace, and it would get like about 5 seconds into it, and the music would stop. And I'm like, I must have done it like 6 or 8 times, and he was trying to, there was smoke in there, and I yelled at him, and I said, because he has so convinced me he can fix anything, and has that if I ask him what's wrong with this, and he says, I don't know, I'm like, What do you mean you don't know? Like, you're the guy that knows everything. Like, what? Like, I see your mouth moving saying those words, but I can't accept this reality. What do you mean you don't know? And finally, every time I start this thing, the freaking music stops. And then it occurred to me, oh, it's because I'm videoing with my phone and playing the music from my phone. So I am making this happen. And I had to do it like 5 times before it occurred to me, oh, never mind. Go on and work with the... But it's such a teachable moment. Because there's so many things in your life that you just can't realize are you. And then you realize, oh, it's me. Here's the thing about realizing it's you. It doesn't have to oppress you or shame you. It's supposed to liberate you. Because once you say, oh, it's me, well, then what do I need to do to change it? You'd be surprised. I love that teaching about when the parable when Jesus said put the nets on the other side of the boat, because what that says to me is you don't have to change a whole lot. It's just one thought that you change. I mean, if you couldn't catch fish on one side of the boat, why do you think you could catch them on the other side? Because it's the same area, but it's the symbolism of just change something, tweak something. There may be just one small thought that you're holding onto that's not reality. And a lot of times the grudges that you carry are not reality. They're just your perception. And when you can just go ahead and love everybody, then they can say all kind of horrible stuff about you and go, yeah, you know, maybe that is true. And I love you and I hope you love me and we've learned from it. And I love everybody and now I'm not even defensive to say, yeah, I could have done better on that. That was then, this is now. It's 2019, right? Sometimes you have to remind yourself when you've got a good grudge from the 70s. On Saturdays when we're driving, I love to listen to the 70s channel on Sirius Radio because they play Casey Kasem's Top 40. And that was, this is what my theory about why you like certain music. Normally, your favorite music will be the music that you listened to when you were a teenager, when you first got a car, when you first started listening to the radio. Because I can tell you, if it's in the 70s, I can tell you what was playing in 71, 72, 73, all the way through. Once we get past 80, once, I got married in 82, once I started having children, I didn't know, it's a blur to me. I don't know, but those 70s, that was, Casey Kasem would say, What year was this? I'm like, 1972, and I'll always be right because I remember that. And so I will listen to it for a little bit, and it feels like I feel 16, and feel like I'm driving my yellow Toyota Corolla, listening to the AM radio. But then at a certain point, I'm like, okay, it's 2019. Let's get into where we are now. And it doesn't have to be an either or, but you do have to remember, I'm not who I was then. I'm who I am now. I've quoted this Ernest Yeboah before, but I like this. It says, there are so many people whose minds do not belong to them. There are so many people whose thoughts have been purchased by people. There are so many people who have made people kings and queens of their thought. There are so many people who cannot sleep because of people. There are so many people whose lives are a small percentage of their own self and a greater percentage of others. What? When the offenses of people occupy your mind becomes the offense of people instead of your own mind. To have your own mind and to be your own self, free your mind. And that's really the gist of what I'm talking about this month. When you're thoughts are stuck in this one thing, this one offense, this one hurt, this one feeling of inadequacy or whatever. When somebody said something to you that's hurtful and it sort of stunted your growth, at a certain point you have to realize this is just something they said. It's not the truth. This is why self-esteem is so important. If somebody told me little green men have just landed on the roof of this theater, and they're out in the parking lot, I'm going to tell you, I'm probably not going to believe you. I'm probably going to say, I think they're shooting a movie or something. I just don't believe little green men are going to land on a flying in a flying saucer. So that no matter how much you said, run for your lives, I'd be like, no, it's Photoshopped. I mean, I don't. But if you said something to me that I already thought about myself, it would be easy for me to go, oh my God, is that true? I remember. I've chosen to see this as a positive, but I have a family member who I grew up with who just used to mess with my head all the time when we were kids. He would just say things to me like, you know you're adopted, right? And I'm like, no, I'm not. No, you are. And he would make these elaborate stories up about how, you know, everybody in the family knows it, but you don't know it in your family. And so I'd go, you know, I'd be crying to my parents, like, he's just messing with your head. And then he'd say, you know, your parents say that nobody at school likes you. And and he'd just mess with my head all the time. And at a certain point when I grew up, as I got older, I realized, he may be watching today. You know who you are. But what it did for me is I learned not to believe everything that somebody said. I realized, this is just a thing that you're saying, and if I believe it, that's on me. That's not on you. So it actually turned out to be, thank you if you're watching, it actually turned out to be a positive. But see, if somebody says something to you that's really hurtful, but you don't believe it, you'll just be like, well, that's just your opinion. I mean, sorry you see it that way, but that's not who I am. Sorry that's how you perceive me. But that's not my reality, you know. Some people are gonna, you know. Jesus said to the Pharisees one time, and it's a great analogy about perception. He said, you know, with you guys, he said, John the Baptist stayed out in the wilderness and lived like a hermit, and you said he was demon possessed because of it. He said, I did just the opposite. I accepted every invitation to every party. And you said that I'm a drunk and an alcoholic. He's basically saying, you guys are going to, there's no getting it right for you because you're projecting your own. As another time he told the Pharisees, is you put burdens on people that you yourself don't even put on yourself. Meaning the fear that comes from religion is you'll never be good enough. You'll never live up. I've even noticed it. I never, either with Jimmy or John or Corey, those are the three people that worked for me in all those years as worship leaders. I never told them what they could or couldn't lead. I always believe in creative freedom. But it amazed me that even some of these more progressive type worship song writers who aren't old school Hellfire and Brimstone, but even some of their lyrics and their songs are still so self-deprecating. And, you know, there's one, and he's a great songwriter, and I know him, but they used to sing this song about mercy that would go on forever and ever, ever, a hopeless case of, if not for grace. And I think, are we really going to have to do it again today? Because it's like it would just take people into this mindset of, I'm just absolute crap. But somehow, through the blood of Jesus, God can somehow stomach me. That's just not my theology. Nothing against the grace of God, but I don't think I'm a hopeless case. I don't take anything away from the grace of God, but I think what it did is it created a whole generation of people who never learned how to have ethics or morals or tell the truth or believe in themselves, because it was all just, in my flesh dwells no good thing. I don't accept that. I would tell Paul himself, I don't think, to say no good thing dwells in your personality, that's not true. And I don't think God would say that. If that's who your God is, fine. But I can tell you, my God doesn't say to me, oh, I cannot bear you, but somehow, through the blood, I'm going to eke out some mercy to somehow stomach you. I'm just, you know, I'd be like, God, thank you, but if hell's not too painful, let me just, because they actually like me down there. You know what I mean? It's like, I know, straight is the gate, you know. I mean, broad is the way that leads. I know, like, yeah, just let me go hang out with them, because I just hate that I put you out so much, you know. I don't want to think I've got to go through eternity with Jesus looking at me going, you know you shouldn't be here. I don't want a Jesus that every few minutes is going, nail prints, you're welcome. I don't, you know, that's just like a really obnoxious Jesus. Like, I get it. Thank you. Oh, Lordy. Is that just me, or do y'all need some of that? I don't know. I like the songs that say, God loves me, and I'm doing okay, and I love God, and I love you, and we love each other, and we don't have to just, I don't want to say, I basically can't bear you, but because of the love of God, I'm able to somehow put up with you. I'd like to think, maybe you want to be with me because I'm fun. Maybe you like me. No, Bishop. We're only here because God called us to be here. I was like, oh, please, don't do me any favors. this is, I haven't referred to this in a while, but it's such a great thing that Paul said, Philippians 3:13. He says, my brothers, I do not consider myself to have fully grasped it even now, but I do concentrate on this. I leave the past behind, and I love this. This is the Phillips translation. With hands outstretched to whatever lies ahead, I go straight for the goal. I love that. Because you can't drive through life looking in the rearview mirror. You just can't. Rearview mirror is there to check periodically, but you've got the reason why rearview mirror is this small thing in the middle of your dash, your windshield, and your windshield is this big area of glass, is because it's more important to see where you're going. And you learn from the past, and you put the past in perspective, but you can't live in it. You just can't. I don't know if you ever heard it. I had a church one time. It's called Church in the Now. And when I was a kid, people think I'm making this up, but when I was a kid, I used to watch Flip Wilson on Thursday nights on NBC, first African-American man to have a variety show in prime time. Nat King Cole had one in the 50s, but it wasn't really a variety show. It was more like a music show. Love Flip Wilson. And he used to do a character called Reverend Leroy, the pastor of the Church of What's Happening Now. And when I was a kid, I used to think, that's such a great name for a church. If I ever grow up and start a church, I'm going to call it the Church of What's Happening Now. And so when I grew up, I did, that is what I named. I just, you know, Church in the Now was looked better on stationery. But I loved that idea, the Church of What's Happening Now. Because so many churches you go to is the Church of What Was Happening. That's why I'm telling you, I'm not against communion. We had some beautiful times in communion. I just don't think Jesus in the now is as preoccupied with his death as a lot of his followers are. You know, we're clinging to the old rugged cross, and he's like, you know, I haven't been there in 2,000 years. You know, you know, I did move on. It's interesting, when John saw him on the Isle of Patmos, there was no cross. Jesus didn't come dragging a cross going, you remember when I did this? You're welcome. It was a completely different thing. I think I've made that point. I'm just seeing what jokes are going to work for my comedy routine. Francis actually posted this week, and I like this. I wanted to use it because this Eckhart Tolle, because the way he says this, because we're talking about breaking the addiction to fear. There's no fear in love. I like that it says worry pretends to be necessary. That is a really good line, but serves no useful purpose. That's one of the best things I've ever read that Eckhart Tolle wrote or says. Because sometimes if you're not worrying enough, you can think, am I not grasping the seriousness of this situation? I should be more worried. I should pray and worry. I should pray and then I should worry. That's the way a lot of people are. It's like, well, you know, we're praying and we're worrying. Well, pick a thing. I can't promise you that prayer is going to fix everything, but it's going to do a whole lot more than just worrying about it. Worry is just going to exhaust you, and it's not going to change anything. If anything, it's going to send out negative energy that's going to make the thing you're worrying about actually get worse, to where your own worry is picking the scab off that thing. It's like it's you're keeping it infected. You're the one that won't let the thing heal because you keep worrying about it. And thoughts are things. Thought sends out energy. And what caught my attention about this is worry pretends to be necessary. There's another quote that says, worry serves no purpose. If there's nothing you can do about it, worry's not going to help. And if there is something you can do about it, worry's not going to help. Then do something about it. Either way, worrying about it, all it's going to do is make you miserable and affect your health negatively. It ain't going to change. You fill in the blank. Whatever you like to say in the blank, dude. And then I think there's a meme I have by Chopra. It says, fear, this is good. It says, fear is the memory of pain. You know how we've been talking about how people get addicted to the negative feeling because they feel like themselves when they feel the negative feeling. It's like, what is it, Psalm 124? It says, when the Lord turned the captivity of Zion, we were as them that dreamed. Like the people had been in slavery for so long, they didn't know how to not feel like slaves. Like it didn't, how do I feel differently? There's a lot I could say about that, but let me stay in the lane. Fear is the memory of pain. Addiction is the memory of pleasure. Freedom is beyond both. Very insightful thing he's saying here, because, you know, well, fear isn't pleasurable. Yeah, when something feels familiar to you, your brain interprets it as pleasure because you feel like yourself. I mentioned Nehemiah earlier, but what's interesting about the story of Nehemiah in chapter 8, verse 10, is where he says, the joy of the Lord is your strength. The reason he said that is after they did restore Jerusalem and they did build the wall, which walls in antiquity were necessary, he told the people, he said, now we need to have a celebration. And he told them, he said, go home and in King James, he says, eat the fat and drink the sweet. In other words, go have a party and exchange gifts. And it says the people started weeping. Like they didn't remember how to celebrate. They said, we've been slaves for so long. We don't even, what do you mean, eat the sweet, eat the fat and drink the sweet? And he was saying, go eat something that's not good for you and don't feel guilty about it. Like they were like, what are you talking about? And that's when he said, the joy of the Lord is your strength. In other words, you can't live like this. To everything, there's a season. There's a time to mourn. There's a time to refrain from mourning. I love that story after David's son had died, and the prophet comes and exhorts him, and it says that after he had mourned, he got up and washed his face and moved on. There comes a time. If you've had pain, there's painful things. Like this week, it really hit Ken night before last, because there at Rock Eagle, he grew up right down the street from there. His parents were the first couple to be married in the little chapel there in 1955. So it's a special thing. Well, it burned this week. It's mostly stone, so they can probably rebuild it. But it was hard for him. I mean, it was, and I got it. I was like, I'm sure that is a painful thing, because it's not like we're hanging out at the chapel there together. It's just the idea of, wow, that was a part of my parents. It's not there anymore. And for that, I didn't tell him not to, I not only didn't tell him not to cry over it, I teared up about it too when I heard about it. I said, oh man, hate to hear that. And I understood why, yeah, you should feel really, that's sad. I'm sorry that happened. It didn't shut us down. We still got up and got ready this morning, but it's sad. And part of his catharsis was posting about it, saying, I was sad to hear this. And people shared some of their memories of that chapel or whatever. That to me is totally healthy. Now, if every week he was posting about it, I'd say, we need to talk about this because that means this is too painful. But there's a certain amount of pain that is appropriate. I hate when you go to those kind of funerals where they say, we're not going to cry here. They're in a better place. They're in a better place. Nobody better cry. Like, what kind of monster are you? The guy's mother died. Let him cry, for crying out loud. Doesn't mean you don't believe in God or believe in heaven or believe he's in a better place. Doesn't mean you're not relieved that he's not, or she's not suffering anymore, but they died, for crying out loud. Shut up. The scripture says, weep with those that weep. Jesus knew he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead and still wept when he saw the tomb, because it's still painful when you see, yeah, I believe life goes on, but man, this part of it was painful. There's a balance to it. But there also comes a time when you say, I'm addicted to a negative feeling that I need to break this addiction because this isn't who I want to be. Somebody posted something today. I don't even know who it is. I was reading this morning. It was a meme about, it was along those lines, and it was saying, basically, don't cry over the memory of somebody. Be glad that they lived. It was such a whole list of things about being proactive about, because I believe if people from the other side could communicate with you, that's what your loved ones would tell you. Like, I'm not weeping for you. Please don't weep for me. And I think that's what hit Roe so hard the other day. It was one of our last meditations. Because she got so deep into the meditation, she really heard from people from the other side. And the message was, we are okay. And it really affected her. I mean, she's an intelligent woman. She just didn't make stuff up. Something, she heard something that was legit. And it kind of started with our first meditation, when your meditation teacher had passed and you didn't even know it. And we're sitting there on the beach and she stopped and said something to you out of the body. Before she went on, I'm like, wow, some serious, I'm telling you. I think it's kind of why I want to go to Stone Mountain. I think there's some ancestral stuff I want to tap into, because something happens in meditation. Your mom experienced it when she came. She said, I know this sounds crazy, but I felt like I had ancestors that were talking to me. I said, doesn't sound crazy. It's like that's part of the purpose of it. But when you're on this side of it, there's a certain amount of it that, yeah, that is appropriate. It's like telling somebody goodbye that you're not going to see for a while, and you cry over them. Well, yeah, that's appropriate. But I like this because he says freedom is beyond both. Freedom says, I'm not addicted to this memory of pain, and the receptors in my brain are going to no longer interpret pain as pleasure, because I've had this negative thought for so long, it's starting to feel like me, and I don't want this to be me, because this is what happens when I have a memory and I keep talking about the memory. I start the cycle, and I'm recreating the memory constantly. You know, when you've, for me, this is a touchstone. When I start to tell something and that's happened, and something in me says, are you really going to tell that again? Are you really? Isn't that story tired? Or if I'm going to tell it, I can tell it with some detachment now, or laugh about it, or, you know, but I don't, the negative memory doesn't rewire. But what you were talking about, even what you want to write about, you want a new story. Man, that is so true. The story of your life that you write, you become the character in it. Well, it's kind of like that book you're talking about, that you're reading about synchronicity, that you are your life's a story, and it has a, It has a protagonist and an antagonist. It has villains, and you know, when it turns out the villains that oppose you is your own ego, and that's why you have to, you know, that's why they say what you don't like in somebody else is probably what you're noticing about yourself. And it's so liberating when you realize, oh, I'm learning from this person. One thing I wrote in that meditation last night, I said, there's some people are probably never going to be in your life again, and that's fine. Forgiving somebody doesn't mean we're going to pick up where we left off. Some relationships have a shelf life. They have an expiration date. They just do. That was true in the scriptures. Well, yeah, sometimes, thank God, but yeah. But like even, was it Paul and Silas in the book of Acts, as they had no small disputation, and they had done these amazing signs and wonders together and never spoke to each other again for the rest of their lives. So that's not a new phenomenon. That just happens. But again, to quote Dr. Seuss, don't cry that it's over, smile that it happened. When you get your thinking right, you can look back at every experience, every relationship, all of it, and say, remember when I did that teaching last year about how on the sixth day, God looks over creation and he says, it's good. You look back over your life and own everything that you created and say, I'm at peace with it. It's good. And now I enter into rest. That's when you set yourself free to start a new story. Until you start a new story, the old one's going to keep having addendums to it. There's going to be extra chapters about that same character. And if that character is not evolving, and you're that character, you're the only one that can change that story. But every time you tell that story, if it's a negative story, one more time you've reinforced the negative for yourself. You've crystallized that reality one more time. And, you know, people say, well, I need to vent about it. I thought about it this week, because there are all kind of issues in a week. And it was in my mind this morning, because I started to repost this, because there was it was in my memories. It was a post that I had said, that moment when you have written and rewritten something 25 times, every time you start to hit send, something in you says, don't post that, and it's just not worth it. And I was so evolved, I didn't even need to post that memory, because I thought, I don't even need to talk about that memory, because that's going to make, y'all know what I'm talking about? That's going to make people start talking about things you shouldn't post again. I'm even post. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't even want to even have that conversation now. And it's not that there aren't issues in my physical body that I have to deal with. I'm very careful. On some days, I will text my trainer and say, I'm going to give my back a rest this morning. That's my way of saying, oh my God, you have no idea. But I don't want to be negative about it. I'm like, I'll see you tomorrow. That means I'm going to have to do a little recovery today. I'll be back tomorrow. That I'm prophesying my own resurrection. There's all kind of things. I read that people write about parents with Alzheimer's. I'm like, I can top your story, but I don't even want to post that, because I feel like it creates a reality for my dad that I feel like my words are too powerful. I don't want to even say that. Oh, I'm not in denial. I'm just saying, what's the point? What's the point of posting something? Because I feel like it's dishonoring him, and it's going to cause people to relate to me in a way that I don't want them to relate to me. And it's not that I'm in denial over it. I call my mom every night, and she catches me up on what happened today, and some days are better than others, whatever. And we're learning the best way to deal with certain situations. And kudos to her if she's streaming today. I mean, she's definitely risen to the occasion. And but these become touchstones when you realize, boy, this was 5 years ago. I'd have been talking about this nonstop. Now I just want to talk about what's positive. The memories that come up, like, oh yeah, that one made me happy. That was good. That, like, there's a picture of me having lunch with all my kids. Yay, that's an energy. I like that. You know, post that one. there's something that Ken and I did that was fun. Yeah, post that one. That's good. Those are, I want to flood the quantum field with lots of good, happy thoughts. Think on these things. Does that mean the negative stuff isn't real? No, I got stuff just like you got stuff. I got issues just like you got issues. There's just certain things I don't want to energize, and it's not denial. And I think a lot of you all you get that because you're in the same place. It's like, yeah, it's there. I could talk about those things, but what would be the point? It's been a huge lesson for me in the, gosh, I can't even think how many years it's been now since I've gotten a hate letter. And I realized once I stopped bleeding, I stopped attracting sharks. Like, when I would talk about it, post about it, whine about it, all it did would make religious people go, I smell blood. And they, you know, it's like me and the thing the other night. I'm like, oh, I'm making this happen. I remember it was such a epiphany for me. One of the last staff meetings I had, we were still in Covington. Jonah was there. Avery was there. The night before, I had gotten just one of the worst letters I've ever gotten in my life. I mean, just the kind of thing, if you didn't believe in yourself, like that, if no other one would do me in, this one would push me over the edge. And I sat down at the table and I started to tell, because that's how we started the meeting, like, you know, catch me up on what's going on. And I remember looking at everybody and thinking, I want to tell you about this thing, but now I'm thinking, why do I want to tell you this? Like, you all love me, so I'm not, it can't be that. You hate all the people that hate me, so I'm not trying to, there's no thing, you know, do I want sympathy? Like, God, I hope that's not it. And I just went through the list. I thought, no, I'm not even going to, why even bring that person to this table? And because if I say this, y'all are going to, yes, I was going to use another word from vent, but that's what I meant. Rhymes with itch. Y'all are going to blank about it with me, and we're all going to talk about how horrible religious people are, and we're all going to talk about homophobia and blah, 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 and it's not going to change anything. It's just going to make us all feel really gross. And that might have been my last letter, now that I think about it. I think that might have been when I buried it. That day when I thought, I'm not going to, this isn't going to be part of my reality anymore. Now, I still protect myself. Like, if I have an opening and somebody sends me a friend request, I'll look at their page. Like, where's, you know, and there's some people I'm like, I'll friend you, but are you coming in peace? Because I'm not, homie, don't play that. I've already, I want to say, you're not even qualified to argue the scriptures with me, so I'm not going to waste my time, you know. But even that doesn't happen now. It's like, it's so amazing. You know what I taught you about the, you either spiral upward or spiral downward? Now the letters I get are, oh my God, you've changed my life. Oh my God, you know, I hear from people I can't even remember. And they're like, I've been with you for 25 years now. I'm like, really? Oh, wow. Okay. You know, and you've always have the word for me. Really? Okay, person I don't know. Glad. You'll always be my pastor. Wow. Okay. And I don't even mean to sound sarcastic. I'm like, okay, that's cool. I mean, yay. Okay. That person that just recently washed by the words, she sent me a really nice letter. I think she's probably on a different page than I'm at, but like, she's, no, it's great. And I don't know if you still have Washed by the Word for Kids, but that would be a great nurse, baby shower present. I'm like, got a basement full of them. Tell me how many you want. Love to move some of that inventory. And I was like, glad. She said, do you mind if I quote you in my next book? I'm like, sure. She said, I'll send it to you to see if you want to prove it. I'm like, yay. And I did a screenshot of it and posted it. I'm like, because that's the energy that I want to I want to talk that up. The more you talk up that stuff, the more that stuff happens. We're going to leave it right there. But the more we can expose the addiction to fear and ego, the freer we're going to become. And the easier it's going to become just to love everybody. Just in the old Southern words, just bless their heart. You know what I mean? There's a real liberty in that. When somebody is starting some nonsense with you, you're like, bless your heart. Let's all stand. I started to tell you my Jan Crouch story one more time, but I don't think I will. The night Jan Crouch changed my life. Did you get anything out of this today? Aren't you glad you found your way through the fog? Remain standing, and then I'll speak a blessing over you after this. If you will play this.
Contributing to Metron is quick and easy. You can give anytime using any smartphone.
Anytime!
Text the amount you'd like to donate to
404-620-5044. Don't make me become a comedian.
You will then receive a notification that you successfully completed your donation. You may also visit missionthenow.com and click the support tab to give there as well. When you contribute to Metron, you're also donating to the charity or organization of the month. Thank you for your investment into Metron.
If you have a check, make it to JESM and Danny will receive that back there. If you have cash, pay it forward. Bless somebody. If you want to bless Jonah with it as our artist, you can do that. Or take somebody out to eat or whatever. I love you so much. I really do. I think every week that you come here, I love you even more. Just when I think I can't possibly love you anymore, and yet I do. And you're cuter than you were last week, and you're all adorable. And as y'all, if y'all weren't at the last thing, Fro was on fire at the last. I don't know, he's gone to a whole nother level. And what he said that morning about putting a ring on it, that was so funny. We ain't living in sin anymore, we put a ring on it. Us married ladies now, what us got to eat? All right. You're going to have a beautiful day, beautiful night's sleep, a beautiful week. You're walking in love. You're free from fear. Love is the more excellent way. The love of God is shed abroad in your hearts. It's easy for you to forgive. It's going to be easy for you to let things go. It's easy for you to just learn from even your own mistakes and then forgive yourself and then move forward. You're going to live this week in the now. Your body's going to feel good. Your mind's going to be peaceful, and you're going to have clarity. You're going to make good decisions. You're beautiful. You're attractive. You're smart. You're successful. You're intelligent. And you wake up tomorrow saying, this is the day the Creator has enabled me to create. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Love you so much. Peace.